David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 439. I'm your host, Steve Raker, down in the comic book bunker and neuro-linked to my imaginary friends, Whirlwind X Kevin and Andrew the L.A. Rabbit.
It's better than Skype.
Hey there, hi there, ho there.
Yeah, I just got back from my Thunderbolts Fight Club.
Marvel Noise is the now 17-year-old Marvel-centric podcast that remains proudly sponsored by nobody. We post twice monthly, just like your favorite Marvel titles during those summer events back in the 90s, you know, like the Sidekicks Revenge.
Now twice a month. Always hard on the budget, though, Steve. It was always like, dang it, man, they're really, really, really sticking it to you.
Yeah, I can't wait till the reference is 18 issues a year.
This episode, we've got the fourth of five segments covering writer Peter David's run on Captain Marvel. Genisvel, Marvel's test tube baby from cloned material or whatever. We covered all 35 issues, plus the zero issue, Kevin. Across Marvel Noise episodes 430, 434, and 436. And all of those and these issues are online on the Marvel Unlimited digital service, and they're in a big, fat, hardcover omnibus that was released earlier this year, I think.
I think the first issue is missing some material, though.
Honestly, I thought it looked really good on the tablet, Steve.
Yeah.
We're getting into the nice... Soto Meyer does a really helps kind of smooth the different art teams along, and it looks good on the fancy stuff. I don't know about paper, but in the little magic box, it looks good.
I think it worked on paper, but I think like there was some different formats to these early issues too. And when you flip open that first issue, and you're kind of like, "Is this the same artist?"
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, boy, he really leveled up. Like he went through his own transition or something.
But I think that's partly the colorist too. So, yeah, as the years go on, he's like chipping away all those edges that I liked. So it's kind of weird.
Really, I thought he still had some of the exaggeration.
Yeah, it's some of it's there.
It's not like he went total. On model or anything. They're still kind of crazy looking folks, but I thought it was real slick. I was like, wow, this is looking good.
David's title, Captain Marvel, was a critically acclaimed hit that generated a lot of fan mail supporting it, but the sales were deemed not that good by head honcho at the time, Bill Gemmis. So David called out Gemmis's lack of promotion for the book as a contributing factor in a open letter, right? So the book then gets a boost with a new number one and a new direction, but same creative team, and was included in a fan participation contest, right? Gemmis gives a new number one to David if he'll make it more accessible to new readers, kind of change the direction. So gone are all of the industry and inside jokes that were wearing thin on you, Rabbit.
Oh, come on. I love the golden apple reference. What was it? Silver tangerine or whatever the hell it was that was making fun of the golden apple comic store.
So Marvel uses, and it wouldn't be the first or last time, uses the wizard magazine and the letters pages to like promote a what's supposed to be like a feud and this contest. You decide, and the deal is after six issues, the only one of the titles that has the most votes would be able to continue. And the titles are Peter David's Captain Marvel book, Bill Gemmis's awful DC parody, and I say parody in air quotes, Marvel, right after Smallville started airing on TV the year before, and Joe Quesada's Ultimate Adventures, which was the first Ultimate book to introduce a brand new Ultimate character that wasn't like a takeoff on a pre-existing Marvel character, and it was like Owlman or something, I don't know. But needless to say, Captain Marvel won, and it was pretty much set up for Captain Marvel to win. The whole thing was about, you know, it was just a big stunt to get more eyes on this book.
Steve, I voted for Humus Sapien, so.
And as you guys said, with the art, the first five issues are drawn by the first series penciler Chris Cross. But the difference is it's shot directly from his pencils, which at this time looked really snazzy, but it definitely was a technique that I think kind of industry-wide people started getting tired of.
Yeah, it was one of those gimmicks where like, oh, if you can like get rid of the inker, you get, or you can do something else where it's like, oh, I can save time, or I can do this, or I can do that. And it's not really a long-lasting thing that you're going to continue doing.
But on this title, I think it really worked. And right from that first splash page where it's the big desert arch scene with the scenery, I mean, it really looks great.
You know what's confusing for me when I looked at this first issue cover? Because I have no memory on Marvel Unlimited of this cover. Hmm. And then I went to look it up and I went, oh, I think I got a different cover. Because I think I got all the Alex Ross covers.
Oh, like nice.
The deluxe editions.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I think the colorist is able to do some heavy lifting. And when we see the other art teams come in, for good or ill, I think it helps provide that continuity.
Yeah, I think everything looks like a 2000s or a 00s book now rather than like a 90s book or like a classic book.
Agreed.
Yeah, I just was like, whoa. Because as you guys know, I'm kind of less on the older books on the TV. I read them. But the new, this is when now, okay, these books now look really slick. So it's the digital thing is working a lot better than when it was just the boring old, you know, old comic book sort of remastered or whatever they call it.
It took a certain type of colorist, though, like here at Sotomayor doing it. And like they went with this look on with Richard Isonov a lot, like on the what were they with Jay Lee, the Stephen King Dark Tower Gunslinger books. Had that same, you know, they were just so lushly colored, but the colorist was acting as the inker as well.
I was thinking of like Wolverine Origin or some book like that.
Yeah, or there was like an Ultimate Avengers thing maybe with Matsuda coming back. Not Matsuda, the dude with the big feet who went into gaming.
Mad.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
He came back and he wasn't quite the same. Not that you would really expect him, but it was just different.
Part of it was that they shot it right from his pencils, and it was that I think too. By then it was growing, you know, it was growing old. But here it does look really great. And as the series opens, we find Captain Marvel. He's overwhelmed by his cosmic awareness. You know, it's kind of like wondering how it doesn't drive Superman crazy to hear all the people that need him all around the world at the same time, and he's got to try to get to them all, and how can he do that? You can't just turn that off. So what does he do when he goes on a date with Lois? Or you know, he has to, you know, it could be driving him crazy. And here with Genus, Marvel, it's the whole universe's cries for help that he's hearing.
Yeah, that's definitely how you serious up a book. If you're having too much fun, you start probing into some dark corners of something like that.
I wasn't hugely thrilled with the basically removal of most of the dialogue and let's have it be kind of almost picture book style, which works sometimes, but I thought for a, And I know they got to jam a lot of continuity and setup and all that into it, but I didn't think that this book needed that. Like Kevin said, it strips most of the humor out, and it provides like a distance to it, where I thought the other one had a real feel of in the characters, where this, it's that distance to it. But boy, I may have glazed over reading it, but I could enjoyed looking at the pictures.
Yeah. I think part of that was really wanting to showcase. I think they were probably wowed by the art too, you know. Again, it was new ground.
So you know what else I don't remember? I don't remember this issue being all captions.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually they do away with some of that stuff, but I'm just like, it's amazing what you don't remember.
Well, gone is the back and forth between Marv and Rick, you know, and gone is a lot of the changing back and forth, the swapping and stuff. So Marv gets in a conundrum where he's got to choose between a girl being beaten to death, this like slave girl, or saving thousands from some disaster thing. And he stops the disaster, but then with his cosmic awareness realizes that the girl would have been this big peace bringer across the universe, and he let her die, and it drives him mad. He's catatonic at first, completely unresponsive.
Yeah, this whole thing, really, all I could think of later on as it spins out was the Homer Simpson with the frozen yogurt. This is good, and this is bad. Oh, but that's good. You know, where it keeps shifting. It didn't hold into me. And not just the back and forth between the two of them, but the whole book frequently had dialogue, snappy dialogue between different characters. So, we start getting that back, but it was just weird to kind of freeze that. You know, like Peter David, let's kind of make him a bit more drier.
Part of the deal was to make that he promised that he would make the book different. So maybe, you know, maybe some of that was tongue in cheek, like, you want different? I'll give you a different.
Yeah, definitely. Almost aggressively so. But it's funny, like, you take away all those things I loved about the book, and with these first six issues, I mean, it works. And I'm just like on the edge of my seat, and I'm like, this is completely different type of thing, but I still really want to know what's happening.
You like Beefcake Rick Jones,
Kevin? Who doesn't?
A month later, both Our Time and Marvel Time, in issue two, Marv encounters the Punisher, and it's this funny scene, like a perp takes a human shield, right? But Marv knows that the human shield is actually a worse criminal than the perp who's threatening him. And he kind of lays all that on the table, and Marv kills the human shield guy, taking that away from the perp and allows the perp to flee. The Punisher's like, are you crazy? And Marv's like, yeah, I thought we established that. And that becomes a running gag of the, are you crazy? And he's like, yes. Well, you know, I thought I said that on the way in, you know. So Marv wants to hang out and learn from the Punisher. And he does for like a few weeks. They show him hanging out in the apartment and sitting on his sofa chair and stuff. Because Marv can find the Punisher's targets really easily with his cosmic awareness, but he also can see their fates, like whether they do good or ill in the future. So, you know, some guys he's telling Frank he can kill, and other guys he's saying, no, you can't kill this guy because he's going to do good.
Yeah, I liked the setup, but I thought the handling of the Punisher, he made him a little goofy at times.
Yeah.
And I was like, sure, that seems like a weird, for how dark the book is getting, you're going to make the Punisher be the comic really.
Right.
There were a lot of weird bits in here.
That's clever though. Also
sit with me. Great. Like I said, I sometimes would gloss over it and just look at the artwork, but yeah, it was a weird thing.
So while this is going on, Rick climbs this, he's the microverse still, and he climbs this high snowy peak to seek help from like the microverse equivalent of an isolated Tibetan mystic up in his mountain cave. So Rick shares his tale, but right when the mystic is about to offer his sage advice, he's killed by this protoplasmic ebony blob, a sentient one at that, that then taunts Rick afterwards. And kind of leaves him trapped up there in the cave. So Rick's trapped up there in the mountain for a month. He's kept the fire going and is eating the dead mystic's corpse as food.
Yeah, because they're not human. Oh. It's good to establish that, Steve. He doesn't look human. He's, I mean, sentient, but wasn't like, we don't have Rick Jones the cannibal just yet.
And suddenly, one day, a blue girl wanders in out of nowhere and chats Rick up. Somehow she leads him down the mountain and sticks by his side as he becomes a rock star in the microverse. He's always a rock star. And they kiss and she reveals her name is Epiphany. So after a night of bumping uglies, or maybe day, you know how those rock stars are, Rick overhears her talking to a hidden figure, but the voice is the voice that taunted him on the mountaintop.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the call is coming from inside the house. And that voice reveals himself to be this spectral cosmic being. Meanwhile, Marv conquered and set himself up as the ruler of this warlike tribal alien race. And the Kree bring like a military unit there to conquer it. And they're all surprised because the inhabitants welcome them, that like they want to be conquered. Please save us from Marvel. When they encounter Marvel, the commander of the military unit is actually the military man who trained Mar-Vell, Genis's father, the original Captain Marvel, in combat. But that's just a quick side comment to make the next scene even more graphic, when Genis Vell just slaughters the guy and dons his uniform and takes over the Kree military unit.
Wait, what?
Hey, yeah. You know, that guy should have retired. He trained Captain Marvel, what, in the 60s or something?
Yeah, right.
So maybe he should have taken pension when he had a chance.
Do you get pension in the Kree Empire? Are their benefits good?
But this is the Kree green, white, with the green helmet uniform way back from the original Captain Marvel. And, you know, it's got like a cosmic twist to it, though, because it's, you know, cosmically aware Genis Vell, and Alex Ross designed the look, and it is really super. It's cool.
Yeah, it's a good costume.
You got the Marvel Legends of that one?
Did they make a Marvel Legends of that one?
They did, and I've got it standing next to my other Genis Vell.
I guess I don't have that. I think
I got to get up and turn around and look, because it's on the shelf behind me.
Yeah. I don't think I have that one.
Oh, no. Yep. He's all cosmic, all right. He's got all the little star speckles all over him and everything, and yeah. Yeah, he's awesome looking.
All right. I don't know. I'm going to have to look that up.
Mine's wobbly, though. It's got, like, the weak joints. I hate that.
Oh.
How sticky is it, Steve?
Has
the plastic started to
no.
get that oily residue yet?
No. It's not broken down to its half-life.
From, like, the 90s, he's, like, miscolored now, and he's a bit oily.
What is cool is they have the holster on the side that you can put his gun in, which is kind of cool. Anyway, so as captain of this military unit, they report to their larger garrison or whatever, and Marv wants to learn discipline and, systems at work, you know, like an institutionalized setting like this. But as captain, he sleeps with his commanding officer's mistress and earns his disdain. So in issue 4, he's sent on a suicide mission, this Shi'ar ambush that the Kree are all in on, but ends up surviving. So his commander then tests his loyalty by ordering Marv to shoot his lover. It's all very dramatic because Marv is crazy, right? But he kills all the Kree around him instead, then puts the gun inside his mouth and kills himself as the issue ends.
Again, wait, what? Like, what kind of cliffhangers are these?
I like Race's artwork here, but I do feel like this isn't the best use of him. Again, the colorist is providing a lot of continuity, and I like Ivan, you know, I was thinking of him as a DC guy, but...
No, he doesn't come on until much later. This is all still crisscross.
Oh, is it? Because they have the first credits line listed as Ivan.
Really?
Yeah, they credit him as the pencil art in 4.
All right, maybe he was for 4, and Cross comes back for 5.
Yeah, my Cross bad. Comes back for 5, but yeah, at least that's just what the Unlimited and another source has a credit, and it looks a little bit slightly different, and that's why I was like, I like Reese, but I think they're trying to keep it looking more like the old one. Also, I love how Rick's guitar is spacey, like it looks like basically it's a guitar, but they add some little fancy microverse bits to it, so he's basically playing a guitar, but you know, the sci-fi guitar.
A little hunk of Biotron on there. They should have done something like that you could recognize from one of the old Micronauts on there. That'd be funny.
The Baron Karza edition of Strat.
You should have a Baron Karza hairdo.
You know what's nice about this too? You can see all the pencil. Like, it's not a solid black at times.
Yes.
You can see all the pencil lines when he's like shading it in.
It is cool.
Yeah. I guess they both get picked up by DC, and then you got to find another artist for this book.
The fifth issue has Marv awakening on an astral plane. He climbs out of a grave that is his father's grave and meets Mar-Vell. And they have a short talk, but then Genius just beats Mar-Vell into a bloody pulp. It's horrible.
I like when he transforms into Crazy Man with all his little faces inside his space body.
Then Marv is greeted by the being with the voice that Rick heard, which introduces himself as Entropy.
Oh, no.
And he schools Marv on the rite of passage that every male must achieve to break away from, and in some cases surpass, their fathers. And Entropy himself is on that trip, but his father is Eternity.
Wow, that's a family.
So, from here to eternity, Steve.
Yes. So Entropy wants to blow it all up. And Marv is like, cool, let's go. Now, issue 6 wraps up the first arc, shot from the pencils of Paco Medina now. And there's a really cool Andy Kubert cover as well. But Chris Cross is gone. And Peter David said in a 2024 web blog that the whole Marv Goes Mad storyline was all created to cater to Chris Cross's wonderful ability to draw crazy, right? To draw madness, to depict that, the helter skelter behind the eyes and all that. But then all of a sudden he's unexpectedly gone after 5 issues, and he chooses to stay the course for good or ill.
I thought Medina does good. He keeps the kind of exaggerated facial features and everything. And again, you have the colorist sort of smoothing it out. I thought the transition, I mean, obviously you'd want to keep the same guy, but it wasn't as jarring even as the Rice bits, I think. So I thought it worked.
What felt jarring to me was that, and I think maybe part of this was the having two different, you know, another penciler finishing off the last issue, but when this issue opens, like, there's some awkwardness in the choreography here, because when the issue opens, they've already destroyed the universe, right? Like, all that happened off panel. The deed is done. And a month later, only 4 beings remain. Entropy, his sister Epiphany, Marv, and a molecularly dispersed Rick, because Marv likes him. So he gets to live. But Rick is furious. Like, how could you have done this? And Marv is crazy. But didn't we establish that already, right? That's keeps coming back to that. But he took pleasure in crushing eternity. And now they're like, all right, so now what? Right? And Entropy, he doesn't know because he never thought about that. He's a primal force who's fulfilled his duty. So Rick suggests, you know, well, maybe you could create something for a change, right? And then you can just, you know, destroy it someday, like, if that's your thing.
But is he Galactus?
So Entropy is like, but all I know is my father. And Rick's like, so work from that, which I thought was a really very clever meta and humorous bit on Entropy's whole bit that he went through, the whole thing of the having to surpass and not be your father and all that. And when it comes back around, he's like, but all I know is like what my father was. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, done in a cosmic comic book kind of a way. So Marv shoots Entropy in the head with a big bang, pun intended, and the universe is recreated. The son has killed the father only to become the father.
And they really should give the colorist a bump for this issue.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot of work in this thing.
And Rick's back in the microverse. So the arc ends with Marv going back and getting a second shot at that moral dilemma that he experienced in the first issue. This time he saves the girl who was destined to become the bringer of interstellar peace. But the tragedy that he didn't stop affects her life because her husband dies and then she doesn't become the peace bringer anyway. So it's like you just can't win for trying. And that realization drops Marvel right out of the sky and he's catatonic again. Clunk, like leaving like a Wile E. Coyote humanoid imprint in, you know, crater in the ground when he lands, just like clunk.
Yeah, this was that whole Homer Simpson, but the yogurt is bad, but yeah. It's free. All that back and forth. But you guys could have sold me on this years ago if you'd told me who the artist was on the next few issues. You guys know I love it.
Ditto. Issue 7 and 8 is a Monsters and Gods two-parter with Kyle Hott's pencils.
Yeah. Oh, love him. Now, I don't think he works as great as this, how this style does it, but I don't care. I'll read anything he works on.
I loved it. I loved it, looking at it right from the pencils. So that's a little bit different from how I usually get to see his work, so I thought it was awesome. I'm used to seeing all those heavy blacks, you know, the inker goes wild in the darkness of Kyle Hotz's artwork. And this is good. And issue 7 has a Walt Simonson cover with Thor and Captain Marvel on it. And issue 8 has a really sick Leonardo Manco cover. That's really looks nice.
But he just does great. Like all the people look twisted and disturbed.
And how about the Storm Giants, right? The Storm Giant faces and everything. Hotz is awesome.
Even like Thor doesn't look right. Everybody's got a problem.
He's got a little bit of that, and I don't mean to act at all like his art is derivative, but he's got a little bit of that Kelly Jones off of Bernie Wrightson, you know, off of Wrightson's influences. So it is just carrying on in that nice tradition. I prefer Hotz over Kelly Jones's art, though. Comic book confession. So two-issue arc is kind of a cosmic twist on the old Mr. Smith goes to Washington as Captain Marvel goes to Asgard. This is the time of the floating Asgard over Manhattan with Odin gone and his power has been passed to Thor.
Not JMS.
So Marv thinks that he's a god now. So he should have worshippers and he should move in with the Asgardians, you know, like, honey, I'm home. He shows up at the gates. He's not received well, as you can imagine. And when Thor confronts him, they banter about like what makes a god, you know, is it worshippers? Is it omnipotence? That's kind of fun.
Also, can I say, although this is heresy and off model, kind of enjoyed the hammer with the long handle.
Yeah. A little longer. Still shorter than a true long-handled hammer, but... So just then, Asgard is also attacked by Drang and Strum, the first and most ferocious storm giants, which then, like I said before, wonderfully rendered by Kyle Hotz. Their noses, their face, the hair coming out of their ears, the whole bit.
Whatever's happening with those abs.
Oh, I love Captain Marvel. He looks like some kind of weird bodybuilder, but I mean, a few extra muscle groups thrown in.
How, when he's crucified at the beginning, when yeah. he meets the priest and stuff, how great did that panel look, though? It looked so cool.
I don't mind, this isn't figure drawing. It's a comic book, so have fun. You know, add whatever crazy exaggerations you want, as long as it flows with the story.
Marv uses his cosmic awareness to learn the history of their grudge with Asgard. That, I mean, it turns out that Drangenstrom were the indigenous inhabitants of the fields where Asgard was built, and they were driven off and driven to hostilities by the Asgardians, kind of a la American Indian displacement. So eventually Thor, learning of the truth, is reasonable and offers diplomacy. But one of the giants isn't having it, and Marv just pulls out his gun and shoots him dead. And he's like, all right, twice as much for you now. Looks to the other one. It's like his insanity leads to these out of the blue, like seemingly impulsive actions that I think are really well played by the author and artists, plural, because it carries over between art teams. But I think these serve as the humor moments now.
Man, it looks so good. I'm sad it's only two issues.
All right, the last arc, issues 9 through 12, is a four-part arc called Coven. And this is shot from Ivan Reis's pencils, which is why I thought you were prematurely dropping his name. Issue 9.
I feel like he's less now going, he's more leaning into his less...
Agreed.
Like, okay, Crisscross is gone and he's back apparently, so let's do our own thing.
Yeah,
so
I ain't gonna try to follow Hotz, right? Like, yeah. You're not gonna try to do that.
That would have been funny.
Issue 9 has a Claudio Castellini cover that is gorgeous. I mean, I really like Castellini's artwork. I mean, he's one of those whatever happened to him type guys, but I loved his stuff. It had that John Buscema inspired, but just did gorgeous color work, and his Kirby power of his figures just seemed so natural. Really liked his stuff.
Well, like you say, powerful, but not the cartoonishly over, which can work too, but not the like muscle on top of muscle on top of, you know, guys that look like they couldn't bend over without snapping everything, but can still convey in the power, but in a more traditional way, I guess. A throwback way, almost.
I have a great Castellini Silver Surfer shirt, where the surfer is just in silver, and the rest of the shirt's black. Really nice looking. Issue 10 has an Alan Davis cover with Spider-Man. Issue 11 has a Chris Cross cover. And issue 12 has a Carlos Pacheco, Jesus Marino cover.
Well, you gotta have... They had Punisher, so you need Spider-Man to appear next. When does Wolverine show up, Steve?
Yeah, maybe in our last segment.
Does Ghost Rider show up?
So the deal here with this Coven arc is there's this tattooed serial killer, Carl Coven, who looks like a mutant out of Dark Knight Returns, if I may say. And he's put to death and survives, and then is allowed to go free because he's, you know, he's paid his debt to society by dying, you know, for a second.
Ugh, all the things I love, Steve. Courtroom, serial killers, just my favorite subjects around. Boy, I'm glad this is going to last for a few issues.
Because he said he was part alien, this Coven guy. So it was hard to tell whether that was just him showing off or misrepresenting himself or whatever. But he did come back alive, so maybe. Now that he's back, Coven goes after Rick Jones, who had helped put him away by testifying to a murder that he had witnessed. Marv has other ideas because he's become fascinated with the legal system.
Uh-oh.
And Marv imbues Coven with some of his cosmic power, which seems unthinkable. And they seek out this big alien that's chasing another one, his slave, this more diminutive alien. And Spider-Man arrives And he's going to help the little guy who's being chased, right?
But, I miss when they called it the Power Cosmic. Steve, can we go back to that?
No, that's the Silver Surfers. You get the other guy gets the cosmic awareness from Ego or whatever. Eon. But Marv intercedes from Spider-Man rescuing the slender, diminutive alien and renders them all unconscious. And when they awake, it's Andrew's favorite type of scene.
Ooh, more courtroom stuff. Comic serial
courts. Yeah, comic book courts. And it's a trial. Marv is the judge. Coven is the bailiff and representing the big dude. And Spidey's got the little guy. So if you really pull it back, instead of fighting it out like would normally happen, Spider-Man would come upon them in the alley. He would help the little guy out, fight off the big guy. Marv has slowed things down, and they're going to work it out in the process. And the process ends up revealing shocking information. Spidey learns that the slave alien is a voluntary slave. It's a whole sex thing. So Spidey rests his defense, but Coven just kills the big alien guy anyway because of contempt of court.
I can't believe they didn't have She-Hulk or Daredevil in this, Steve. I mean, how do you do like a courtroom thing without... I mean, I know we've had the Spider-Man Venom courtroom stuff, but you need one of the superhero lawyers.
But more, I think, was about turning the tables on Spider-Man and showing him that if you play this out, it's not what you think. And your gut reactions, your instinctive reactions, the comic cliche scenery, you know, reactions of how the scene would go, you know, isn't right in this situation. And Marv could perceive all that with his cosmic awareness, so he let it all pace out.
Yeah, because normally Spider-Man unerringly only fights bad guys. He's never fought a hero before in the beginning. Oh, wait a second.
In issue 11, Rick convinces Marv to switch places for 24 hours. And so on Earth, Rick gets a visit from the wife of the police officer that Coven killed, that Rick witnessed and he got put away for. And she's, of course, is distraught that Coven is free. Then she gets kidnapped out of the window by like a cosmic coven on a flying motorcycle. Laughing.
Wow, this is like cosmic carnage all over again.
Totally. This dude is cruel, evil, and he's mentally and emotionally torturing this woman by like making her, you know, see how her husband died and taunting her about his last word. I mean, it's terrible. Rick,
I think we should have given him like a scooter or something instead of a motorcycle, something kind of silly.
Hawkeye's sky cycle. Yeah. Rick wants Marv to rescue her, of course, but he's being stubborn. He's being a jerk about it. He's like, Rick, I promised you 24 hours, so you've got 24 hours. Sorry. And so Rick has to go after Coven on his own. But he does manage to rescue the widowed wife. Issue 12 opens with Marv poking at Rick, who is this close to considering killing Coven to protect both himself and this woman.
Except he can't because the Coven has superpowers.
Well, not only that, but it's a little twist on the fact that this is one of the things that Rick demands of Marv. And has done so since the beginning of Peter David handling this character. No killing under no circumstances. And he's always getting them on it about that. And here the tables are turned and Rick is put into a position where he just might. Right. And Coven attacks. Rick and the wife. But Rick had threatened Marv, like, I'll injure myself and somehow injure you, etc. You've got to depower this guy. You've got one chance to do the right thing here. Be the hero. And when Coven attacks, he does depower Coven. So that lets Rick, but you know, it's all part of the game on Genisfell's part because he wants to put Rick in the position to make the choice. And so Rick is faced with the moral dilemma. Do I kill the guy? He's got the gun. He's pointing him at him. He spares him, but shoots him in the balls instead.
Of course, this is what you do.
But then, unexpectedly, Coven siphons all of Mar-Vell's power into himself. He did say he was an alien, so maybe there's something to that. But, I mean, he siphons it right out of the microverse. So now he's super-duper jacked up. But just then, in perfect Peter David orchestrated synchrony, the big alien who is chasing the slave, his race shows up, like a whole like armada, to like get the guy who killed their, you know, brother or cousin or whatever. And Marv snaps his fingers and removes the power just before Coven is blasted and he's killed. I mean, really killed. He's like a, they even show it's like a pile of steaming goo with like a leg sticking out of it and a, you know, like an arm bone.
So, he's immune to electricity, but not laser blasts. That's the alien power.
Yeah, well, you know how you deal with someone who can absorb energy, right? You overpower the battery.
But don't they usually explode then and blow back?
First they get really big, and then they're like, yes, and then they're like, no!
Yeah, he's but all charbroiled.
The arc ends with the moral to Rick. Hey, dude, think twice before you judge me all the time. You're always sitting there judging me from the microverse, thinking you know better. And walk a mile in my shoes, brother. And Rick has to eat crow kind of at the end and suck it up. Call him sir. But I thought it was pretty powerful. Each of these arcs was powerful in its own way.
Yeah, for my taste, though, nothing really comes close to the first 6-issue arc. That's kind of, if you're going to read one out of this series to see what happened, I'm like, you got to read that first one.
Or you can do what I did, which is just stop reading and look at the artwork.
Oh, no. Peter David's got good dialogue, and he paces his stuff out good.
I guess it's weird. I don't like when all the characters are despicable. Like, I'm not a big Rick Jones fan. So then when Captain Marvel is like, giving superpowers to serial killers and stuff. Like, it's just not my idea of big two, what I like. And, like, it's one thing if I'm reading some indie horror where they're like, Superman's going to torture planets or whatever, but I'm less into it when it's in Marvel and or DC. Like, those established worlds, I less like the... And also, like, the wildly crazy power levels that I can't get a handle on. So, basically, he's more powerful than like those Eternity and all those forces, you know, like the all those old Ditko characters. Is that what we're now led? I don't know. It just is like a weird mix of what do you do? Is it going to be just crazy evil Superman stories? Well, I can, you know, all that boom stuff was better for that for me.
Just despite his crazy in each of these things, he was ultimately just trying to make a point, right? Like,
He taught
Spider-Man a lesson. He taught
Rick a lesson. Cop's wife lesson was don't be married to a cop, which is fine, I guess.
She doesn't get a lesson. That happened. That murder of her husband happened before.
No, but she gets kidnapped by the guy.
She went through all that torment for sure. That was terrible.
So that was a lesson for her for what? Like, I don't know. That's the thing where I feel like if he had just tortured Rick or whatever, I get it. But
that's because you don't like Rick.
Yeah, that's I don't like Rick. So that sort of stuff didn't. And like I said, the beginning, it was just a little too disconnected. But I really love the artwork. So I recommend just flipping through on the Unlimited. And Kyle Hotz, how can you go wrong?
We've got one more segment of 13 issues to wrap up this whole Peter David Captain Marvel deep dive project. So maybe in November.
Yeah. I think it's more of the same, but we'll see if it confirms my suspicion.
Ooh.
But this is a pretty wild transition from the previous volume.
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely not the
same story. Something different. Yep.
Boy, it looks good.
Yeah, But it's almost like, hey, let's give some superpowers to a serial killer. Totally a Vertigo pitch.
Well, I mean, they also had that with all the when the Venoms all spun out, you know. Sure. Wasn't that the Carnage bit and all that stuff, too?
I mean,
all
those I like the Carnage bit, apparently, when it first came out a lot. But at this point, I'm like, I mean, I've seen that bit. So I don't need to people to reiterate on, oh, wasn't that serious thing really cool? And we can do it even more sinister. I'm like, no, I'm over it.
But he looks so cool in his Alex Ross design costume.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the same thing sort of happened with horror movies. Like when you're a kid, you're like, oh, look at these horror movies. And then I sort of like grew out of it, but everyone's like, no, horror movies are still the thing. But it's like, no, I'm like, I already did that. I'm done with
it. It is weird. I don't watch, I kind of think I'm like Kevin in that way. I used to watch a ton of them when I was late teens, early 20s, and now I don't watch any of them.
So don't tell Phil. It's all the good ones. All right. So with this, thinking of this in November, that leaves us in the meantime with a seasonal horror episode. Perfect. Maybe Andrew can watch a few movies and report on them. And some reason
to be Marvel. Oh, Agatha All Along. Will that be done? Maybe I only watch those things when they're done.
Ooh. And we'll do a recent reads in there somewhere next month. All right. Thanks, guys. Until Rick Jones becomes Captain Marvel Jr., make mine Marvel. Later.